welcome to a special brewery showcase episode of
Brutal Battle.
Yes, it is the brewery showcase time. This is something we started a few tens of episodes ago, and we really liked it. If people don't remember, we started with doing Victory Brewing out of Pennsylvania. Then we did Founders Brewing that's out of Michigan. And we decided, hey, you know, we need to hit up the West Coast. It's only fair if we hit all the main regions of the United States. We're then thinking about where we need to go after this, and maybe to another country or something. Or maybe we'll just cycle back to the East Coast.
Yeah,
I don't know. But anyway, so we're doing West Coast, and I figured what better brewery to, you know, showcase the West Coast than one of the breweries that really started it all was Sierra Nevada. I know a lot of people say that Anchor was a brewery that was, you know, involved in really pushing the craft beer industry on the West Coast, and that is true, but Sierra Nevada is one that I personally wanted to look at because their pale ale was very important to my life. It's kind of the bridging beer that got me into hoppier stuff. It got me into the pale ales, which then moved me into hoppier things, and that's kind of the point of their pale ale anyway. But so we're doing Sierra Nevada, and they're out of Chico, California. You might say, oh, you've already really showcased Sierra Nevada because you did that,
beer camp.
Yeah, we did the beer camp episode, which was, you know, a lot about Sierra Nevada's beer camp program, but those were all collaboration beers. So this is about Sierra Nevada. There are no collaboration beers. We're doing strictly Sierra Nevada beers. And in that vein, we are doing three of their staple beers and one special beer. So.
And now that we're sitting here doing this, I'm kind of wondering if you picked this because you wanted to purchase the special beer.
Yes, I kind of did.
Carlin is not supposed to be buying any beer, yes. But if it's for the podcast, he's allowed to.
I found a way to make the show work to my advantage.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically,
mm-hmm.
This is why I steered it. There were numerous breweries that were being thrown out for the West Coast. We went through everything from Rogue to Oscar Blues to Great Divide to Lagunitas,
yeah,
all sorts of. We talked about a lot, but in the end, I really wanted to get what the final beer is, which we're not going to say what it is yet.
Yeah.
I wanted to get to the final beer because it's a special one. I've always been wanting to try it. So it was a perfect way for me to say, mm-hmm. Hey, we need this for
the
show.
We need this beer.
We do need this beer. But there's,
like, you know, when he comes home, I got you a beer.
Well, usually it is a beer for you, but I would like to maybe taste it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So cool. So we're doing Sierra Nevada. Rebecca's going to go ahead and start pouring the first beer. So you'll hear a satisfying sound of a cap being popped off, which, by the way, real quick, bit of information about their caps. They used to have screw top caps,
really?
Sierra Nevada back in the day. And they decided to go to non-screw top caps because after a while they figured out that it really cut down on the instances of oxidation because it's a tighter seal if it's not screw cap.
Oh, that's okay. Because I was wondering why it says use bottle opener on the top.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's probably still there because when they used to have the screw off tops.
Well, so. And if people still associate them with the screw off.
Yeah. Right. And this is a brewery that's been around for a long time. That's the other thing. And this is one of the reasons I like doing these showcase episodes, because there are things that people really don't think about with these breweries. It's just kind of like, oh, I know some of the beers that they do. But you don't know how they got started. You don't even know how old they are, typically. I mean, I usually don't. So don't pour the whole thing.
Oh, sorry.
We're only pouring a little bit because then we're going to have to move on.
Hmm.
Rebecca was getting a little heavy-handed.
Heavy-handed.
I think she really wants to try this first beer. But first I'm going to talk about something, like some of the beginnings of this. So Sierra Nevada was created by a man named Ken Grossman, all right? And Ken Grossman started out doing home brewing, which a lot of breweries, that's kind of how things get started, with doing some home brewing, which makes sense. He ended up learning home brewing from one of his good friend's fathers. And then as he became, as he grew up, he started doing his own home brewing and got more serious about it. He ended up moving to Chico, California after he had taken a trip there with a friend.
Where is Chico, California?
I don't know. Somewhere in California. I don't know specifically. Maybe I should have looked that up.
I can look up.
Okay, yeah. So he he fell in love with Chico as a place and decided he wanted to move there. So when he moved there, he ended up opening a homebrew supply store. And that's kind of how he started out. But he kept doing homebrews while he was there. And it got to a point where he was allowing people to taste the homebrews at the store. So it got to a point where people actually started really like anticipating the new homebrews that he was having come out. And they were all like, oh, I'm going to come in and I want to sample his next homebrew. So he started thinking, huh, you know, maybe there's something else to this. Then that's when he decided, hey, let's go ahead and actually start a brewery and see if we can make this happen. And of course, he chose Chico, California, because he was so in love with that place. So he actually decided to name the brewing company after his favorite hiking grounds, which is Sierra Nevada Mountains. So just to give you an idea of how old this brewery is, he opened this brewery in 1980. So this brewery is 35 years old. Now, when you think about it, you're like, oh, 35 years old really isn't that old. But when you think about a lot of other breweries, the overwhelming majority of breweries that are out there right now, they're young. Like, there's pretty much super young breweries. I mean, we did do Founders, and Founders was a tad bit older. I don't remember how old they are at this moment. But I think that of the breweries that I've actually looked up how old they are, to date, Sierra Nevada is the oldest one I've looked up. So, very cool to know. So, we are going to actually take a step away from the information at the moment about the brewery, and we're going to go ahead and taste this first beer we have sitting in front of us.
My phone is acting up, but it looks like Chico is like in the, it's like north of Sacramento.
Okay, so but it's not like coast side. It's no. Not like close to the water. And any anything.
Like when you're looking it up, it talks about how it's like it borders the Sierra Nevada.
Yeah, yeah. So he's like, oh, you know, nice. It's like right there, and loves those hiking grounds. So it's a perfect name. So what's the first beer that you poured for us here?
So the first beer is the Nooner,
and this is actually a staple beer, but it is a new beer. It's to be a year round, even though it's brand new.
Okay, it's Nooner. It's the Pilsner.
Mm-hmm.
German-style Pilsners are the original session beers. The Nooner is our version of this classic style, loaded with floral and spicy hop flavor, balanced by a crisp and dry finish.
And what's the ABV on that?
5.2.
Makes sense. You know, lower ABV. I'm smelling it already, and it is smelling like a very typical Pilsner. It's got that kind of, you know, as some people say, like kind of rough, assy, like hay type finish on the nose.
I like the nose. It puts a smile on my face.
It's a little bit of like a dark hay type thing. Yeah. Some people would say like a horse blanket is what some people have said.
Horse blanket?
I don't know what the hell horse blanket is, and that sounds like BS to me, but I know what like they're referring to. It's kind of like barn-ish.
I feel like that's just a fancy way of saying hay.
Yeah, it may very well be. Are you smelling anything else? I mean, it just smells like a light Pilsner. Yeah, it's a Pilsner, you know? There really aren't that many different scents or flavors that you typically get from Pilsners, but you just took a sip, Rebecca, so what are you thinking off the bat?
I like it. I mean, it tastes exactly how it smells. You kind of get what you smell.
Yeah.
It's very nice. It's not like, it's full of flavor for what it is, I think.
Yeah, it's got a lot of the typical Pilsner malt flavor.
Like a yeasty finish on the.
Yeah, it's like bready. It's got this kind of bready, biscuity type quality to the finish.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that I want it to finish a little cleaner than it actually finishes.
Oh, I thought it finishes clean.
It finishes relatively clean, but I like Pilsners that finish with even less of that kind of Pilsner hay type note to it. Like, I feel like that hay aspect kind of lingers on my tongue a little bit. Yeah. But
I like this.
It's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. It's extremely drinkable, as people would say. It's it's one that you can just keep sipping and sipping and sipping. And there's flavor to it, but it's not crazy amounts of flavor.
It would be a good gateway beer.
Mm-hmm. This is definitely, and could be a really good beer for people to kind of say, hey, you know, I've got this friend who likes Miller Lite or Bud or whatever. I want to bridge that gap. I want to get them into craft and show them there's something kind of similar to what they're currently drinking, but better. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this Nooner actually could be one of those beers to do that with. This isn't a beer that I'm going to reach for again, just because, you know, Pilsners need to be particularly exceptional for me to want to get them again. But I can recognize that a lot of people would probably, you know, have a good time with this beer.
See, I would reach for this again, though. Like, I feel like I've said this a lot on the podcast. Like, you know, outside, by the pool. I feel like the back of the label says it perfectly. Easy drinking beer that's fit for friends and an afternoon adventure.
Yeah, I mean, this
you
is
know, like I
do. You, are you out in the sun and you just want to get some alcohol, but you don't want to dehydrate the crap out of yourself mm-hmm. by drinking something high ABV, or don't want to have too much flavor? Yeah, I mean, it'll work. It's fine. I
like it.
Okay, so while you continue sipping on that, I'm actually going to talk a little bit more about Sierra Nevada's past, and then we'll get to another beer, which Rebecca, you can start working on in not too long, because this section won't take me a whole lot of time.
Well, I just poured myself more Nooner.
Well, it looks like you gotta slam the Nooner, which sounds really funny. That should be like a saying now. Dude, you gotta slam the Nooner. That should be for like any beer, basically. If you want someone to man up and finish the beer real fast, just say, dude, slam the Nooner. I like that terminology. I think people should just start picking that up. Slam the Nooner.
Slam the Nooner.
And you can credit me, and you can credit Sierra Nevada. And Rebecca.
I didn't have anything to do with it.
You were involved. You made me say it, basically.
Well, I poured myself more beer, so you were forced to say it.
Mm-hmm. And that's my point. So, a little bit of information. Like I said, you know, 1980 is when Sierra Nevada became a brewery. Ken Grossman, at that point, he wanted to make a pale ale, okay? But he wanted to make sure that it was an accessible beer, because you got to think, this was back in 1980. People were not used to hops. You know what I mean? Like, really not used to hops back in the 1980s. I mean, hops have only really taken off, you know, within the past, what, 15 years. So, he wanted to do that. So he set out to start doing it. He used the last of his money to try to come up with a good recipe for a pale ale that he thought would be able to bring people back in and keep drinking. So he ended up dumping 10 batches of beer before he got a recipe that he liked.
That's a lot. That's a lot of money, too.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing to me is it shows the level of dedication to trying to create something so specific. You know, like, I want it to taste like this.
Right.
So I'm not going to settle for anything close or subpar in my mind.
When you say he dumped it?
Yeah, dumped them.
Are you sure he didn't just share it with his friends?
Well, I mean, I guess maybe he could have, but he could have been like, look, not so hot, but we can all drink it. I'm not selling it to anyone, so...
That's probably likely what happened.
But that 11th batch, basically, is where he reached the balance he was looking for.
Hmm.
So, really interesting information. So then in 1981, just a year after the brewery opened, he decided that he wanted to be able to create, like, a special holiday beer.
Hmm.
So he created Celebration Ale, which a lot of people know about Celebration Ale. And right. You hear about it all the time. So Celebration Ale features... the first, like, the freshest harvested hops of each season. And that's kind of, like, the idea behind that beer is they take the freshest hops at the very beginning of the harvest season and they make that beer. So, it's a very fresh harvest beer. Now, this was done back in, you know, 1981. So, this is a long time ago because you're hearing about a lot of, like, fresh hop beers now.
Yeah, but they
started doing it way back. And this Celebration Ale was actually, by many, has been considered the very first American IPA ever made.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I thought when I was doing my research, that was a very cool thing to point out.
Yeah.
Ken ended up then falling in love with the Cascade hop, that particular hop, which was from Yakima, Washington. And he really started liking it because of its citrusy, piney notes. And this was still, like, back in the early 80s. So he decided he wanted to really use that a lot. So when he started using it, it actually ended up taking off eventually. And that's kind of the hop that embodies and has defined West Coast IPAs, typically. I mean, yes, they're branching out now, but historically, when people think about, you know, what a West Coast IPA tastes like, they're thinking about Cascade hops, mainly. Hmm. And Sierra Nevada really shaped that. Then, in 1983, is when Sierra Nevada brewed their first batch of Bigfoot barley wine.
Wow, that long ago.
Yeah, that long ago. So you think about barley wines and how they've really only caught on in the past, same as, yeah, you know, hoppy beers, like 15 years or so, maybe actually even less than that. And they did it back in 1983. Now, listen to these stats, too. So think about the time of 1983 and what beer people were typically drinking. When Bigfoot came out, it was 10% ABV. That was probably unprecedented. People were probably like, what is that? And 100 IBUs.
Ugh.
100 IBUs. You want to talk about hoppy at that time? Really? Like crazy hoppy at that time? So, and they say that this was actually considered one of the earliest examples of, quote, extreme brewing.
Hmm. Really?
So, you know, when you think about, like, Dogfish Head now and how they're such an extreme brewery and have, you know, they really shaped kind of the extreme brewing within the past, like, decade, you know, you got to look at Sierra Nevada back in the 80s and say they were kind of one of the original extreme brewers. So,
interesting.
So we talked about Celebration Ale, which was potentially the first IPA. So that's interesting that Rebecca just poured us something similar. What is this?
This is the Hop Hunter IPA, and it's brewed with distilled hop oil. Mm-hmm. It is 6.2% ABV and 60 IBUs.
Now, this is another staple beer of theirs, a year-round offering, but it's new. It actually, like, just came out within the past few months.
It says on the back that it's the first beer to feature oil from wet hop steam distilled directly in the field minutes after harvest.
Yeah, and that's what the distilled hop oil means. Distillation is basically steaming, you know, something out of a product. So what they're doing with these hops is basically what it says. They're doing fresh harvest hops, and they're being distilled, steamed right there at the farm to get the oils out, and then the oils being taken and given to Sierra Nevada. So what they're able to do is capture that fresh hop flavor, and they can use it year round. So they don't have to keep using fresh hops. They can use the fresh hop oil.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which should produce the same fresh hop flavor. So that's what's really interesting about this.
So, okay, this might be a dumb question. So there's still hops in here.
Yes, correct.
Like fresh hops, but yes, the oil that they use could be, like, aged a little.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But it's supposed to have the same flavor as when it's freshly harvested.
Interesting.
So.
Okay.
Smelling it, it's got a little bit of a skunky nose to it, in the sense of, like, you know, that a little bit of, like, a dankness that some really hoppy beers can give you.
Oh, I was going to say, I smell the petroleum.
Yeah, it's
flavors that you get from, like, a fresh hop, like,
yeah,
the oil.
Yeah, it is, like, a little bit of, like, a petrol-type scent, like, resiny, oily. Like, people, if you ever actually smelled, like, hop oil, it does kind of smell like hop oil. Like, it's kind of like this resiny, slick kind of scent.
I don't like the smell of hop oil, but I like the way it tastes.
Yeah.
So it's always kind of really hard because I want to, like, pinch my nose.
I like the smell.
Yeah, no, this is like, well-balanced, because you get a little bit of that, but then you get a lot of the fresh hop.
There's a really nice amount of citrus in there, like, mm-hmm, some...
Oh, yeah.
Like, some nice orange aspects in there, but there's also a little bit of pine, and I feel like it's kind of, like, pretty well-balanced between the pine and the citrusy, mm-hmm, nose.
I was going to say pineapple. Like, it's, like, a sweetness.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
You know when you get, like, the pineapple from the grocery store,
mm-hmm,
and, like, the plastic containers that somehow always taste better than anything. I don't know what they do to it.
Probably because it's sitting in some sort of, like, syrup.
Yeah.
That, well, I don't know. Preserves flavor.
I don't know what it is, but it always tastes so good. It's like that.
Yeah. I could see those aspects on this. It smells really good, mm-hmm, as far as an IPA. And, you know, this, you give this, mm-hmm, to most people who know, like, IPAs, and a lot of times they'll probably be like, oh yeah, that's like a West Coast IPA. It smells like a West Coast IPA. So, Rebecca, I haven't tried it yet. You did. What are your first impressions?
So, it doesn't taste like how it smells at all.
No, it doesn't.
Like, it
Well, a little bit.
A little bit, but little it does not taste like an IPA. It has like a, I'm getting a lot more, I was like, did I rinse my glass out? Because I'm getting a lot of the bready finish like I did from the last beer.
Yeah, from the Pilsner.
But we both rinsed our glass, so.
Yeah, it's, yeah, it definitely has that breadiness to it. It's, the flavor is so subdued compared to the aroma.
Yeah.
Little disappointing to me, actually, because of that. Because the aroma is promising so much and such, like, a awesome hoppy aggression, which, as we all know, that's what I like.
I would say I really like this. I think this would be a good, again, gateway. I've used that term again. But for those IPA drinkers who really aren't just kind of getting into some hoppy beers, I think this could be a good one.
Do you mean pale ale drinkers? That want to get into
or whatever,
anyone. Well, wherever wants, you're coming,
yeah,
from,
wherever
really,
you're coming
if
from,
if you want to get in, there,
and wherever you want to go to,
exactly. Where's it going to take you?
Nobody knows, because it's kind of like a hybrid beer almost. Like the nose and the taste don't.
It really kind of is like taking a Pilsner and an IPA and putting them together, because up front you are getting some of those IPA flavors.
Oh yeah,
like I get a little bit of that citrus, I get a little bit of that pine, and then it's finishing with an oak with a decent bitterness, but the end finish is like a Pilsner-y type malt. It's and it's that breadiness. It's interesting. I wouldn't say that I hate this beer or I dislike the beer, because I don't, but it's probably not one I would personally reach for, just because I want something more aggressive when I go with my IPAs, because that's just my taste. But I do think that this could be a good IPA during the summer. Like, you know, people are putting out now session IPAs. I feel like this could be
a session IPA
for me.
Yeah, I would say so. If no one told me what it was, I would absolutely say it's a session IPA.
And you said it's how much alcohol? 6.2. I mean, it's low alcohol too. Mm-hmm. So it kind of is like a session IPA.
I don't know. I guess with the name Hop Hunter, I was expecting a little bit more, but that's okay. I mean, I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. It's a decent beer. It's just, for me, it's a little more watery than I wanted it to be. I wanted a lot more of like a mouthfeel to it, like serious hop resininess, especially because of what I was smelling on it. And I just wanted like more like hoppy aggression, basically. But it's not a bad beer. It's well crafted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think you're ever going to try a beer from Sierra Nevada that's poorly crafted. I think you're just going to try beers that you're like, you know, it's really not for me.
I don't think I'm as brutal as Carlin is when it comes to beers, because I feel like there's always, almost in every beer, there's always like a good quality that I could find myself. Because I'm very much like I want my beer to match my activity or what I'm doing. Yeah. Like, I feel like there's always... Well, Carlin, I think, will always gravitate to an IPA no matter what he's doing. I definitely am like, for this, I want this type of beer. For this, I want this type of beer. So, yeah.
Well, I'm going to go back to talking about the brewery, but I'm actually not going to talk about like the history of the brewery for this little section. Since we just had Hop Hunter IPA, there was something I wanted to bring up, which was a lawsuit that was filed that was potentially going to keep Hop Hunter IPA from coming out in the first place. So if you haven't seen it, go ahead and Google images to check out the label for Hop Hunter IPA, and then Google images of labels for Lagunitas Brewing's beers, and Lagunitas is out of Petaluma, California, so same state, especially like their IPA label, because Lagunitas, Tony McGee, the owner of and founder of Lagunitas, had filed a lawsuit against Sierra Nevada charging that this label was trademark infringement because of the font that's used on that beer, that's the IPA portion, which I will say it does look like a lot of the font, well, the font that that Lagunitas uses on all of their labels. I mean, you're pretty familiar with Lagunitas. Would you say that's accurate, that it kind of looks like their font?
I'm like laughing hysterically by this whole concept. I don't know. It's an I, a P, and an A, and you're trying to tell me it looks exactly like the font.
It's the font style, you know what I mean? So here's the thing.
It's capital letters.
Yeah,
like
And that's the thing.
And also, what kind of crazy things can you do with the letter I?
Right. But here's the thing, and this was Lagunitas, well, Tony McGee's concern. That is a font that they've used their entire existence. They've continually used that, and I think they started like 1995.
Did they create the font? Did they make the font?
I don't know. Probably not. Because
a lot of people use Times New Roman.
Right, exactly. Yeah, but...
Like...
I know. No, and I think it's kind of ridiculous, and I hate all the litigation that's gone on in the craft beer community, but just to give both sides, I'm just saying, you know,
I already what picked the deal. A side.
Okay, that's fine. And I'm pretty much on that side too, but in all fairness, all of their beers are done with the same font and have been. It's like a 20-year-old brewery. I think they were started in 1995. So the argument was basically that this is, you know, brand recognition. So if somebody goes into a liquor store, they see Hop Hunter IPA sitting there, and they recognize that font that says IPA, they might be inclined to think, oh, it's a collaboration between Sierra Nevada and Lagunitas. Because Sierra Nevada, Tony pointed out, Sierra Nevada does do a lot of collaborations with other breweries, and he made the distinction, Lagunitas does not collaborate. So he doesn't want it to be misconstrued that this is a collaboration beer with Lagunitas, or that it's somehow sanctioned by Lagunitas. So basically, that was his main concern. He didn't want what he called brand confusion to come into play for them. So, I don't know. But, in the end, this suit was pulled back. He decided not to go through it, through with it, and that was because of social media.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, social media, one instance where... Well, I mean, you know that people voice their opinion like crazy on social media. Oh, Rebecca.
Sorry, that was loud.
Rebecca's opening the next beer. People voice their opinions on social media all the time. So there was a pretty large outcry on social media saying, this is stupid. Why are you doing this? It's a label, blah, blah, blah. So obviously Tony McGee was checking out all of the scuttlebutt, as people might say, on the internet, and decided, you know what, I guess so. This is... not worth the bad PR, so he dropped the suit, and here we have Hop Hunter IPA.
So did they change the font in the end?
No.
Okay.
He just dropped the lawsuit altogether.
Because, like, I'm, like, now on my phone looking at... It doesn't look anything like it.
I mean, it kind of does.
No, it doesn't.
No. Oh, well. Let me look closer.
No, it doesn't look. Look at my phone side by side.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's just that kind of that block lettering... with a little bit of extra on it.
Yeah.
I mean, these kind of things, yeah, these kind of things come up all the time. And it was kind of funny to me because Tony McGee had been stung by a suit before because he used 420 on one of his labels at one point, and he got a suit from Sweetwater because they have 420 Pale Ale, and they were like, yo, 420 Pale Ale is our biggest beer.
Now, I could at least see that because it's the same name.
No, it wasn't the same name. Oh. He just, they, in some of the text, because they have like the text that goes around it, it says 420. Yeah, so it was like, well, you can't mention 420, basically. And he was very pissed off about that, and there was a very public, like, blow up from him, and he was berating, you know, Sweetwater on social media. So it was, a lot of people knew about that. So it was kind of like, really, dude, when this whole thing came up, because they're like, you had a, for lack of a better term, a shit fit when Sweetwater took a swing at you. Now you're having a shit fit, or now you're, you know, doing the same thing right. that Sweetwater kind of did to you. And, you know, but as Sean Creel has told me a few times, it gets really tricky when it comes to brand stuff and trademark stuff. And you have to defend what is trademarked of yours, because otherwise, if you don't fully defend it, there can be a time down the line where someone can step in and say, hey, you didn't defend it back then.
Why are you going to do it now?
Yeah, so...
Yeah,
it's tricky. It's tricky. Yeah, it is. I'm not saying that I hate Lagunitas for this. It doesn't fully make sense to me, and I'm glad that in the end, Tony pulled the lawsuit back. And that's the thing. That's the important point. He pulled it back. You know, he made a mistake, he realized it was a mistake, wasn't worth the PR nightmare, and he pulled it back. So, good job on realizing it was not the right step.
I guess, I hear you if something's, like, trademarked, but, I mean, is the font trademarked?
Some people can trademark fonts, but I don't think they trademarked that font. I don't know.
Okay. Well, on that note, let's keep drinking.
We got another beer, though.
Okay. So this one's a stout.
Mm-hmm. They're straight up stout.
Straight up stout. I was going to say there's nothing else on.
No frill stout. It's a stout. What's ABV on this sucker?
This actually started in, they started brewing this in 1980.
Yeah. I was actually going to say after you finish everything with it that the very first batch of beer that brewery ever did was a stout. So yeah, this is very important that they're doing this.
It says that we needed a big beer with bold flavors for the brand new brew house.
Yep.
It's 5.8% ABV.
Okay.
That's pretty much
about where you would assume for a straight up stout. And it, you know, it's kind of crazy to me to think about. It's 1980 and the first beer you brew is a stout. Like, I feel like that's so friggin' bold. Like, you want to talk about when they did Bigfoot being extreme. I feel like coming out of the gate with a stout in 1980 is extreme. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard because I have no idea what, like, the beer culture was back then.
It was, like, nothing. It was things like, you know, it was like Miller and Bud, and then there was stuff like Genesee and Schlitz and, you know, nothing that tasted good, basically.
Yeah. Huh.
But people didn't know that. All right, so what are you smelling? Smell roastiness?
Yeah, I mean,
a little bit of like a coffee smoke, like a roasted coffee aspect in the nose.
This is like a cop-out, but it smells like a stout.
Well, I mean, yes. If it's supposed to be like a no-frill stout. I don't know if they've changed the recipe at all over the years, but this could be the original recipe.
Yeah.
So it probably would be a very basic, straightforward
stout. It's not like real dark. Like, I mean, you can see around the edges more like,
yeah,
it looks almost like a brown.
Yeah, it kind of does. Which we haven't been talking about the coloration with the other ones, but
oh, yeah,
they actually looked straight up for what they're supposed
to. Hey, are you supposed to be doing that?
I'm so inundated with the information about Sierra Nevada that.
Good thing I'm here to keep you in line.
For real, that's so true.
Gosh. Man. Before we do every episode, Carlin's like, okay, you're going to bring your A game, right? Your A game? I'm like, I don't know, maybe it might only be my B game, maybe C, we'll see what happens.
But that is mainly joking, because I know you're going to bring your A game.
I know, so I always get nervous. I'm like, oh my gosh, I better do a good job. But I should have asked you, are you going to bring your A game?
You're getting my B plus. You're getting my B+ game. That's basically what it is. But yeah, the Hop Hunter and the Nooner, they looked very typical for style. Yeah. So, but this stout doesn't necessarily. It looks a little lighter than you would think.
Yeah.
But it smells, you know, like I said, it's got a little bit of a coffee aspect. There is a little bit of a chocolatiness in the nose, a little roasty, a little, which actually is translating to a tad bit of like a smoke type aspect, but not crazy. It's a lot of subtle aromas that I feel like are playing together pretty well.
Yeah.
So they really come together.
I just had a sip and initially, you get, I think, like a big chocolate, and it finishes more with a coffee flavor.
For me, it's not big chocolate. I actually get a little bit of like a cherry note in this beer. Do you get that when you think about it? I mean, you might not. I could be totally off base. Because there's a little bit of like a tart sweetness up front when it first hits my palate, and then it comes in a little bit of that chocolatiness, and then it finishes with that coffee roast.
Yeah, I could see that. Like a, like the dried cherries we got from Oregon, like the dried tart.
Yes.
Like real tart.
Yeah, exactly. Which I know in stouts sometimes you get like a dark fruit type flavor. This is a solid no-frill stout, you know? And I'd like to think that this is the original recipe, which having it way back then before you have many other stouts, this was probably pretty eye-opening for people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very, it doesn't have a full mouth feel. It's a little more watery, in my opinion. But it's very drinkable. All of these beers are very drinkable.
Yeah. It's like nothing, a medium light mouth feel.
Yeah. Nothing offensive.
No. Well, and that is a good point. It's clean.
Yeah.
Like the way it finishes is like super clean. I typically, you get a little bit of kind of that lingering coffee aspect, but it is
not much.
It's super faint. That's a good, easy drinking stout. Once again, I feel like this is a good entry point for people mm-hmm. who might want to get into stouts.
Gateway beer.
Gateway beer again. Is that maybe the theme for Sierra Nevada? Yeah. Gateway beers.
Well, you know, and I think whenever I think of Sierra Nevada, I automatically think of the Green Label, the Pale Ale, because you see it everywhere.
They're super, super well known for the Pale Ale, obviously.
Which I kind of wish, I don't know why we didn't get one.
Mm. I'll tell you why. It's because we've had the Pale Ale on before.
Oh.
We did it on that episode where Nathan Kolasnik came on and we tried a few different Pale Ales to see like where he was with his palate. So I remember that. So I was like, I want to have other stuff that we haven't had of Sierra Nevada on. So.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure we may have done the stout before. I think we did their porter before, but I hope we didn't do their stout before. But I may have been overlapping on that one. Sorry. But I'm glad we tried it, especially because it's important to telling the story of Sierra Nevada because mm-hmm. it was the one of their first batch.
Yeah.
The first batch of beer. Like I said, that is so ballsy to do that. Yeah. I have a lot of respect. I mean, I respected Sierra Nevada for their history in the first place. And they do put out good beers. A lot of people think of them as kind of like middle of the road, easy to drink stuff. And they have a lot of that. But they're still putting out other things that are more experimental, that are very good for, you know, the more nuanced craft beer person who wants big, bold flavors. So, you know, I mean, I'm glad that I decided to do this episode that and I'm also because of the last beer I was mm-hmm. able to get, which I really am excited about. But doing the research gave me so much more respect for Sierra Nevada. Like, yeah. I already had respect, but then now knowing the history and, like, all these decisions that were made by Sierra Nevada along the way, these were not easy decisions to make at that time. I mean, I'm guessing.
I think, like, every brewery we've done a showcase for, I feel like I have more respect for, because innately when you learn the history or you learn, you know, the stories behind the people that made these beers, it gives you a new appreciation.
Yeah, no, it does.
Because, I mean, how oftentimes you go in the fridge, you crack a beer, you drink it, and you don't, you know.
You don't think about how it was made, where it was made, how long it took somebody to come up with that recipe. And there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that go into making beer. And a lot of times it is a labor of love. And obviously, you know, when Ken Grossman started Sierra Nevada, it was a labor of love. He fell in love with home brewing and it took off from there. So, Rebecca, you can start getting the last one ready, which you might hear a pop, people, because this one is actually cork and caged, which is why I'm excited about it. So, the last bit of information to talk about before we get to the last beer. In 2005, Sierra Nevada built a full state-of-the-art research and development department that ended up including cutting-edge analytical tools that were used for examining beer flavors as well as beer quality. And then they became known as... Are you having a problem?
Well, I have this cut in my thumb. Oh, I don't
do you want me
like,
to get that? Yeah.
I don't want to split it open and get blood everywhere.
Sucks. All right, here we go. Ooh. Boom. I love hearing the pop when you pull the corks out.
I feel like it's automatically a celebration.
Yeah, well, it is a celebration. We're recording again. So because of this cutting-edge facility, they became known as one of the most sophisticated research and quality breweries in the world. And this was in 2005, so we were already on our way in, you know, craft beer starting to really take a foothold in the beer industry. In 2007, they installed their very first solar panels, Rebecca.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah. The brewery now is powered by over 10,000 individual solar panels.
I just love hearing stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, if you remember when we did Victory had a lot of sustainable stuff that they did. So, yeah, it's very cool to hear that kind of stuff. So, yeah, 10,000 individual power cells now. That's crazy. So then in 2008, they started their beer camp program, which anybody who wants to know anything about their last beer camp pack that they did, go back and listen to that episode. I don't remember where it was, around what number, but just go back and look, and it'll be in the title. So when they started this beer camp program in 2008, they basically brought in restaurateurs and bar owners for a two-day hands-on beer experience where they would kind of like show them about brewing and have them start brewing. And then they created it into basically a competition for a while where it was, you know, the best beer that was made during those 2 days would end up being one that they would release to the public. So the very first Beer Camp beer that was ever released was a Pilsner. So here's also another good reason why we have the Pilsner involved in this show. And it was called Sierra Super 7 is what the Pilsner was called. I don't know why it was called Super 7, but, you know. And then a final little bit of information to put out there, because I like to throw out this information. So in 1980, they started by brewing 950 barrels of beer a year. And in 2010, because that's the most recent stat I could find on it, 786,000 barrels a year.
Wow.
So from 950 to 786,000, do you think they did something right over the years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, you don't grow like that by making bad choices. So, and they're still kicking. They're still quite popular.
Yeah. Okay.
So here's the last beer. Very excited.
Is the Barrel Aged Narwhal, which is an Imperial Stout. And they do a regular narwhal?
Yes.
Okay. I just looked up what a narwhal was.
Yeah, it's a sea creature with like a horn on the end. It's kind of like the unicorn of the sea.
Yeah, and they're very rare.
Yeah.
Which the back of the bottle kind of describes that, which is kind of neat. It's a dark Imperial Stout aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels.
Now, you and I have had the straight up narwhal.
Remember.
We have, and I remember you liking it quite a bit, because I remember it being like very dark, rich, chocolatey, coffee-y, and it's been a while since I had the narwhal. I really wanted to try the barrel-aged version, because I feel like narwhal was really good, and I'm just like, oh my god, bourbon barrel aging on that narwhal is probably amazing.
Do you want to guess the ABV?
Okay, I'm gonna guess it, like 10.5.
12.9.
Oh my god.
I have to go to work tomorrow.
Well, maybe not now.
No.
You might be like calling in like, I had a run in with a narwhal.
Yeah,
last
I had a run in with a narwhal. A barrel aged narwhal. It's very rare.
They would have no idea what you're talking about. So you'd be in the clear, basically. Because they just wouldn't question it. They'd be like, okay, whatever.
So you might have to drink a lot of this. We'll see.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
Not a problem. I might need you to drink some more of the other stuff, but
so I am really I guess it's been a while since I've been on the show.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. I have been really enjoying barrel aged beers recently.
Which makes me so proud to call her my wife. I mean, oh my god. I remember when I became so proud because she started being like, I like IPAs and just drinking IPAs when she's out at a bar. And then when she told me, I think I like barrel aged stouts. And I was like, what? And I think the one that got you into it was Bourbon County by Goose Island. I think that's what kind of started it.
Well, I feel like Old Stock.
Oh, the brandy aged Old Stock, right. Yeah.
I think was kind of like,
And then I think the Bourbon County was that next push.
Yeah.
So.
But I do prefer my beers be aged in bourbon barrels if I had a choice. Bourbon.
There you go.
I think it's the bourbon that I like.
Yeah, the bourbon usually.
Oh, and
really
that's
good
what
notes.
You get like right on the nose. You just get this bourbon nose that makes you want to like curl up in a blanket, and rub your feet together for warmth.
Yeah, it's definitely got that kind of like bourbon sweetness, like those caramelly notes. It's got that kind of woody oakiness in there, some vanilla maybe.
Yeah.
Brown sugar to it, which goes with caramel, obviously.
It's like
getting the chocolate in there as
a
well.
A warm apple bread pudding with caramel sauce.
I mean, I don't smell any sort of like apple stuff.
Well, not the apple, but like the just maybe like the crumbly stuff maybe you get on like an apple crisp or a warm bread pudding.
I could see pairing this with a dessert like
that. Oh, yeah.
I think it would go very well, but there is so much bourbon up front when you get a sniff of it that, I mean, it smells great to me. And you get a little bit of that kind of like bourbon alcohol sting in your nose.
A little bit.
Which isn't bad. I mean, it's just like,
I mean,
there's bourbon.
It's 12.9.
Yeah,
so.
12.9. But once you get past all those bourbon notes in the aroma, you then start getting to very present chocolatiness on the nose and some coffee aspects.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what this tastes like. I see, like,
you can go in for it.
How well this alcohol is hidden.
Yeah, go for it. Like I said, you know, I've been very excited for this because I remember really loving the narwhal, so the barrel aged. Uh-oh, you look very surprised by it.
Well, initially I was like, oh, wow, it's I don't get a lot of the alcohol initially, but then it burns going down.
Oh, I'm actually not getting a burn going down.
Oh, I got a burn.
I just got it where the alcohol flies from my mouth up through my nostrils and out.
Like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, that you know, you happened. Like breathe the alcohol out of your nostrils, which, I mean, that's the bourbon. That's very present bourbon.
I'm not getting the bourbon in the taste like I did in the smell, which I'm a little disappointed about.
The bourbon is actually giving it a little bit of an astringency, mm-hmm. which is what I kind of assumed, especially because it's 12.9. So it's basically 13%, which is pretty high. But it smells really good. The taste is more focused on the stout, I feel like, the Imperial Stout, than the bourbon. You get the bourbon real quick, and you get that kind of alcohol going through your nose from it. And then I'm getting chocolate, and I'm getting coffee.
Yeah. The aftertaste, though, is, like, straight up alcohol.
Yeah, it is.
Which I'm not digging.
Which, sometimes from bourbon, you can get kind of a little bit of, like, a Band-Aid-y leftover flavor, but...
And that's why I don't like big beers.
Yeah.
Mm. Because it's hard, it's... I feel like if you dialed back the ABV a little bit, this would be a much better beer. I'm just not digging the 12.9%.
Yeah.
It's just not as balanced as I would like it.
You know, I still like it. I think it's good, and I will happily keep drinking this beer, and I would have more of it in the future. It's interesting to me that it's like you're getting the bourbon, but it's really showcasing the Imperial Stout a lot. I think it's kind of... I don't know, like a different approach than I mm-hmm. feel like a lot of these types of beers have.
No, I agree.
So I like it. But the way, I think if there was a way to bring the astringency down in this just a little bit, to bring that kind of like burn from the bourbon and that astringency just a little more in check, that would be awesome. But it's still quite good.
Yeah, it is good. It's just not as drinkable, I think. Maybe it's hard to... Well, what
barrel-aged beer really is.
Well, I think there are a lot of very drinkable, well-balanced barrel-aged beers.
Yeah.
I think it's also hard because we had three really, really drinkable, easy-to-drink, well-balanced beers. And then we had this, which is very different.
Yeah. Which, you know, kind of speaks to what I was saying is that a lot of people think of them as kind of like, you know, easy drinking, middle of the road type stuff.
And, right. And this just proves them wrong.
Things like the Barrel Aged Narwhal, which is, you know, significantly different. The more I'm sipping on it, my palate's getting even more used to the bourbon notes in there and that astringency. So I'm really what's lingering. I mean, I'm still getting that astringency lingering, but... It's starting to have more and more chocolate and coffee notes just linger on my tongue, which I'm enjoying. So I think if you take some more sips of it, I think you might find that you're getting a little more used to that spirit flavor, and it's gonna, you know, I already finished mine.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
And that happens with a lot of beers like that, or like a lot of sours. Like a lot of sours I'll drink right away, and... I'm like, I can't drink it. And Carlin's like, well, do you just have to let your palate get used to it and then, you know, try it again? And
well, yeah, because with sours, all you get on the first one or two sips is the shock of that sourness.
Yeah.
You need to let your palate get used to it, and then you can basically taste past the sourness. And I feel like that happens with barrel-aged things, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you just keep sipping.
I'm going to keep sipping it. I'm not going to say I don't like it. It's not like I don't like it. I prefer the first three.
I will say, you can't really compare it to something like Bourbon County, though, because Bourbon County is significantly richer.
Yeah.
There's a lot more of a body to it than this beer, and there's a lot more of like a chocolatey, like deep chocolatey aspect. This is, in my opinion, a good bourbon barrel aged Imperial Stout. I like it. I would get it again. I enjoy it. It's nice.
Well, you're not going to get it again because it was a one per person limit.
That's true. It was one per person. And I picked one up for Kyle Norman. So we had to split up. And I was like, oh no, one per person. Rebecca's like, I can buy one. I was like, oh yeah, you're right. We're two people.
Yeah. So we're not going to buy another one. And we're not going to buy another one because of the cost.
Yeah, sorry.
But.
Are you feeling like the flavors are coming a little more together?
You know, I think... I still prefer the other three.
I would like the astringency dialed down a little bit, but it's not a ton. You know, just dialed down a little bit. It's still quite good, and I feel like, are you starting to get that chocolate in the coffee more?
Yeah.
On the finish?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's this is definitely a beer where if you drink more of it, it just starts getting better and better and better. I'm enjoying it quite a bit now. Quite a bit. So
it's our time to rate the beers.
We're gonna rank these. This is gonna be kind of tough in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what my number one is.
This one?
Yeah, that's not gonna be a surprise to anyone, I'm sure.
What do you think my number one is? I feel like I'm gonna surprise you.
I feel like you're gonna say the straight up stout.
Nope. Hop Hunter.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I really like the fact that it had like two different characteristics.
Okay.
Between the hops and then like the bready finish. I thought it was really interesting and not like it was kind of a different IPA than I've ever had before. And I really liked it. So I think I'm gonna go Hop Hunter, Stout, Nooner, Narwhal.
Okay, so you dislike the Narwhal the most. Do you like it though?
Yes, I like it. Okay. I like it, but I'm going back for what I wanna like drink another one.
Okay. I hear you. I'm starting to pick up a little bit of licorice-y notes on the Narwhal now, too.
Okay, we're done talking about the Narwhal.
I like it. It's good. Okay, so no surprise for me, the Narwhal, the barrel-aged Narwhal, is number one. I think it's really good. I'm going to put their straight-up stout at number two.
Really?
Yeah, that was... it brought a lot of really good things together, in my opinion, and I quite enjoyed it. I'm going to put the Hop Hunter IPA at number three. It was basically like two different beers, but there is a definite place for that beer. Like in the summer, like I was saying, it's kind of like a session IPA. Yeah. It's good. And then the Nooner, the Pilsner last, but like I said, I wouldn't seek it out, but it's something that I could drink. So none of these are bad beers by any stretch.
No. I know, and I'm drinking more than Narwhal, and I'm wondering how it's going to open up or taste differently as it warms up a little bit.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting, but...
I'm getting some like raisiny notes on there too, which you know you get that with. Okay, we're done. I just want to keep talking about this.
You're like obsessed with this Narwhal now.
It's good though. So, hey, people out there, when we do our next showcase, brewery showcase, it could be a suggestion from you.
Yeah.
Go ahead and send in suggestions. We've talked about some things. We've kicked some things around, like where we want to go. We could do West Coast again. We could jump back to Midwest or East Coast. Or we could go with another country. We could go into Europe or whatever. You know, just jump around. As long as we can get enough of the beers. But why don't you go ahead and send us some suggestions if you have a brewery you want us to do some in-depth research on. And, well, it's not like super in-depth. A little bit. It's just below the surface.
Yeah.
A little bit of research.
It's like just a quick Google search.
But the most important thing is we try... four of their beers on the show and just kind of talk about those. So we can do that. So anyway, go ahead and send us your ideas. You can send it to brutalbattlepodcast@gmail.com. All are welcome to send it in. We'll see what we can do then. So say we get, you know, people coming up with some good ideas, but we get more for one brewery than others. We'll probably go with whatever gets more emails. So
we'll tally up the votes.
And if people don't send any emails in, which is quite possible because a lot of people just like to listen and not get involved, then we'll just pick it, which is fine with us.
Yeah.
Because I kind of want to go back.
I feel like I want to pick one.
You can pick one. That's fine. Yeah,
we're going to do what I want.
Okay. We can do that. I thought we kind of did what you want when we did Founders because you love Founders so much. Kind of.
I mean, maybe, but like I want to pick the brewery and I'm going to pick all the beer.
Okay. You can do that. That's fine. If we don't get...
if we don't...
fan participation.
But then if we get fan participation, we'll do the next time.
Or maybe fans send in an email and they say, we want Rebecca to pick it.
Yeah.
Then there you go. That's the decision. Rebecca gets to pick it. So that's fine. Or you can say you want Carlin to pick it.
No.
Okay. Anyway, thank you so much, Rebecca. Thank you.
Yes.
For being on the show.
Thank you.
It's not like you really have a choice because you live with me, so I can... corner you and make you record with me.
Yeah, he basically sets up the beer, sets up the recording equipment on the couch, and I have no choice but to sit here and talk about the beer.
Oh, woe is you drinking beer.
Boo-hoo.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a big payoff. But anyway, thank you so much, everybody, for listening and for supporting the podcast. We really appreciate that. Stay tuned for next episode when who knows what will happen. Thank you so much, and please never forget to
keep it brutal.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.